College football fans, are you ready for week one? DraftKings Sportsbook is hooking you up with a can't-miss offer to start the season strong. This week, new customers can bet just $5 on college football and score $200 in bonus bets instantly. Anything can happen in college football. That's right. Your team could go from unranked to dynasty mode in just a couple of years. Change comes fast. The only thing that's a lock is great offers from the DraftKings Sportsbook. Life's more fun when you're in on the action. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code TASKMASTER, all lowercase. New customers can score $200 in bonus bets instantly when they bet just $5 on college football. Only DraftKings Sportsbook is the way to go, and use that promo code TASKMASTER, then the crown is yours. That's right. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use that promo code TASKMASTER. Own it, live it, win the crown.
We love the 1980s wrestling era when kayfabe was king and wrestling did whatever it took to protect the business. When all the territories dealt with the rise of the WWF and the NWA emerged as its greatest challenger. Imagine if there were an epic drama series based on that era, combining the corporate warfare and the family drama of Succession with the giant cast and epic storytelling of Game of Thrones. That day has come. Kings of the Ring is the first audio drama podcast based on wrestling.
Go back to your trailer, you hillbilly.
It's a fiction series about the 1980s wrestling wars and the sex, drugs, and muscles lifestyle of the 80s wrestler and the sacrifices they make for success. With guest voice acting appearances by Lanny Poffo.
I even have a good dropkick.
And AEW's RJ City.
I didn't really have that much to do.
Search Kings of the Ring from any podcast app or kingsotr.com and binge away.
Oh, God.
I don't care who you are, boss. I don't give a damn who you are. You're gonna have us. You're gonna have Van Vader, and we're gonna be breathing through your neck.
So you're the man that rules the world. They call me the Shockmaster. You've ruled the world long enough, Sid Vicious. Get ready. Come on, you want a piece of me? You want a piece of me? Come and get me. Come after me, Sid. I'm ready. Along with Davey Boy, Sting, and Dusty Rhodes, we'll see you at the Fall Brawl, at the War Games. Until then,
hello and welcome. I am JP John Paz from the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. Joining me is the former WCW and ECW World Tag Team Champion, one of the greatest minds and bookers ever in the history of the business, the Games Master, the Taskmaster, the Devil himself, Mr. Kevin Sullivan. Kevin, how are you doing today, sir?
Good. That introduction you give me is always great, but I look something up. I was a national TV champion in Georgia twice.
Whoa. You're just remembering this?
Yeah. Well, I knew it, but I kind of forgot about it. And then the U.S. champion, California.
That's true. And, yes.
Yeah. And the funny thing was, when I was working for WCW, we could book guys out. In the late, great Tony Rumble, I started him in the business. And I ended up beating Snooker for the World Heavyweight title for Century Wrestling when I was booking for WCW. But it wasn't nice. Not that it was nice. It was pretty funny. But I worked with Snooker a couple of times there. And I also worked with the Tong Kid in Maine. And they were drawing good, so Foley. And then Tony took up their spot. But I wrestled a Tonga kid when he weighed 180 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah. Do you remember him with Snooker when he first came in?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, he was 180, 190 at the most.
Ooh, a few years later, he's about 290 at least.
Yeah. And boy, could he move when he was 180.
He was still pretty good and pretty movable, you know, obviously as Tama in the WWF. I mean, he's still pretty good. And then some little bit of a can of corn in WCW as well. But he still was pretty good for his size.
All the same time. I'm on my fifth generation. And of all of them, of course, The Rock, right? And Roman.
Yep.
But Fatu, I don't understand why he's not in a major company.
Jacob Fatu?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what's up with that. Some people have said it's possible that he had some, I guess, legal issues, I guess.
At 18 years old, yeah, he had some problems. But he's well past that, you know what I mean? And he can move for a big man.
He can move. Sure.
Yeah, I actually saw him last month in Salt Lake City. I'm going up there again next month. And then I think he's in a show I'm at, Rheingold, Georgia, 1st of October, that weekend. I think it's the 5th through the 8th. He's there too. So
nice.
Yeah, he's a phenomenal athlete.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what was going on with him as far as now. I know that obviously that's in the past, but I'm not sure why he hasn't been signed now, especially with all the bloodline stuff. I mean, they could use another Fatu in there.
Oh, yeah. I thought of an idea with him when I saw him because we actually, him and I actually shared a B&B in Salt Lake City. Very nice place. And I told him. Him and his, you know, a couple of his cousins. I met a couple of his cousins. One of them is about 6'6" and looks good and can work. I said, they should show up and challenge them, like, you guys become Americanized and we're not, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fabulous.
So as far so as today, I'm sorry.
So anyway, that's yeah. my rant for the morning.
I was going to say, so as far as the topic at hand, I wanted to talk to you about 1993 and WCW in 1993. I know you weren't there technically for Fall Brawl. You were in ECW, you were in Smoky Mountain Wrestling, and you were at the Wing promotion, as well as spent a nice little weekend, a weekend of champions, wrestling Terry Funk up in my neck of the woods. So interestingly enough, not there yet in 93, but you were telling me a little bit off air the reason that you were brought in was because of this pay-per-view in 1993.
I'll tell you how it happened. At that time, I was living in Daytona, a mile. I lived on the beach, but it was a mile from the Ocean Center. And because it was in town, I turned on the TV to watch it. And the Shockmaster thing happened.
Yep.
Later on that night, Eric Bischoff called me and said, did you watch the program? And the first thing I said was, I didn't want to embarrass him. And I said, no, I didn't. He said, well, it was a disaster. I said, Eric, I just didn't want to hurt your feelings. It was. And he said, can you meet me at the Marriott? It was right across the street from the Ocean Center tomorrow morning for breakfast. So I went down and had breakfast with them. And that's how I got back to WCW.
Wow. All thanks to the Shockmaster. And of course, what you were kind of referring to is a flair for the gold when the Shockmaster makes his debut in the Darth Vader, bedazzled outfit, the costume, not really costume, the helmet. I mean, the bedazzled helmet of Darth Vader for Shockmaster, and he trips and he falls through the wall, falls down on the ground. Everyone's kind of laughing. And he picks up the helmet and then Ole Anderson does the voice.
Remember that? Yes. Talk about Bulldog. You picked it up.
Yep.
Yeah.
What did you think when you saw it, though? Because, I mean, obviously you're trying to be nice to Bischoff, but you saw it. I mean, that was awful.
Okay. He's a super guy, Doug Bowe. Super guy. And I heard the rest of the story. Do you know why it happened?
No.
They had done it a couple of times before the show. Somebody in their infinite wisdom put a 2x4 across the bottom without telling him. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, wow. So obviously he's got the helmet and I wouldn't be able to see it. Yeah. And he's going to trip.
Yeah, so it wasn't his fault for being clumsy. It was their fault. But nobody wants to take that kind of mistake and blame themselves. But it wasn't his fault. It was not his fault.
Man, I mean, you can't come back from that, right? And obviously, he really doesn't for WCW. He's not really thought of as a serious threat. I mean, that's got to be impossible to come back from.
Yeah, and the other thing is, you know, he was Dusty's brother-in-law.
Yes, Uncle Fred.
What?
Uncle Fred.
Yeah. And he was, I remember when he started in Texas, and we had seen clips of him. When I was in Florida, he was a monster and almost like a giant bodybuilder / powerlifter. And he was getting over there. And he had Gary Hyde as his manager. So, I mean, things can change your life. And that was not his mistake. Whoever decided to put up the 2x4 and him not going through the wall twice, pre-show, and then so why they would do that and not tell him was beyond me. He got a raw deal on that.
It is an unforgettable moment, and not in a good way. You know, the wrestle crap or the botchmania, whatever you want to call it. I mean, that will live on in infamy as one of the worst moments ever. And it's got to be the worst debut ever, right?
Yeah. And, you know, that had a screw with his head dramatically. You know what I mean? He was coming in on top. They had plans for him, obviously. And somebody else's mistake cost him.
When you look at that, and he's obviously, you know, not really ready to fall through the wall there. He's ready to make an impactful debut. He's ready to be a part of Fall Brawl War Games. He's going to be on Sting's team. I mean, there's a lot of important things that are about to happen or you know, leading to happen, if you will, like with this debut. It's going to be somebody that's going to be put in the main event scene. Do you think this immediately just makes him not a laughing stock per se, but this doesn't necessarily make him a title contender for Vader anymore?
Right. And the other thing, Fred could work, especially with big guys, right?
Right.
I thought the helmet was cheesy. It almost looked like Plan B from Outer Space. What was that director's name?
Oh, I forgot. I know what you mean.
Woods. Yeah, just... Ed Woods.
Yes.
It looked like something Ed Woods would do with the pie plates and saucers, you know?
Yep. Carny, cheesy, corny.
Did you think it was a horrible mask, a helmet, or whatever?
I absolutely hated it. And it's like, obviously, everyone knows it's Darth Vader or excuse me, not Vader. It's a Stormtrooper helmet. So, I mean, everyone knows it and it's so recognizable. You can't do that. Can't have that be the gimmick.
No. I mean, they were spending money, I remember, on special effects and masks. Do you remember the guy's name that worked for Turner?
Andre Freitas?
Yes. Very nice guy. But he had worked in Hollywood. He was still working in Hollywood when I met him. It probably was one of those things late in the preparation for it. They said, "We need your mask to then unreveal it." And that's what they got. That goes to show you. And this has nothing to do with Eric. This had to do with the booking or them hoping that the people that went and got that stuff would know what they're doing. I blame that on the division that got stuff like that.
Now, this is Ole Anderson. Yeah, are you blaming Ole at all? Because, I mean, kind of, you're saying it's on the booking and the planning. He's the booker. He's the planner.
Yeah. And to come up with, you know, Ole was always this guy that preached reality, right?
Yep.
This guy sucks. This guy sucks. He came up with the, what was the name of the guy that was the Black Scorpion?
Yes, yes.
He was doing the voice. He didn't know where he was actually going with that. And he actually didn't know who was going to be under the mask.
So, wow, so he's saying stuff like, this guy's from Sting's past, you know, kind of teasing Ultimate Warrior stuff. Like, everything was kind of Warrior-related, and they had no idea where it was going in an endgame. He just was, like, teasing stuff that wasn't even viable.
Yeah, and then when they went to St. Louis with that match, wasn't Rick the...
Yeah, Starrcade. That was the end. It was Flair, yeah, which didn't make any sense.
No. No, I mean...
And at one point, it was Al Perez. At one point, it was another guy. Yeah, it was a lot of different guys.
Think about this. You're going to St. Louis. It was a I'm not in the company at the time. Is this a pay-per-view? I might have just gotten in. This was a pay-per-view from St. Louis, right?
Yep.
Okay. It's a wrestling town. Rick was over at St. Louis big time, you know, because he was the NWA champion. He had wrestled Brody a couple of hours. He had wrestled O'Connor. He had wrestled Jack Briscoe. I believe he wrestled Fritz Von Erich. I think he wrestled David Von Erich there. He was a, where I'm going with this is he was a huge draw in St. Louis. Why wouldn't you announce Flair versus Sting and then the Scorpion, whoever it was going to be? Al Perez would have been a good Scorpion. Al Perez underneath that against, let's say, Barry Windham was a babyface at the time. Am I correct?
At this point, no. I think Windham is a heel here in 1990.
Okay, so maybe a Brian Pillman. Brian was a babyface then, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Brian and Al would have had an incredible match. You could figure out what you were going to do after when you should know what you're going to do, but with a unknown commodity like the Black Scorpion, you'd have to see, I would think, that you'd have to put them in different towns because people react different, wear a mask if you never wore a mask. It's very difficult. I wore one once when I wrestled Dusty. But wouldn't it have been better if it was Flair versus Sting?
You would think for the, you know, the big starcade, if you will, the big pay-per-view, yeah. Yes, and not have Black Scorpion, who it didn't make sense that it was Flair anyway, though. Like, the way they were building it, it had made no sense. Sure, Flair was a top heel, and they had the Four Horsemen stuff, but it just didn't make sense as far as, like, why Flair would be under the hood and doing that stuff. And he's a magician and all this other stuff. Doesn't make sense.
And not only that, Rick is over in St. Louis. He sold St. Louis out a lot. You're taking a chance. Some people might not have thought it was Rick or whatever, but Rick should have wrestled Sting as Ric Flair. Rick was still the world champion at the time, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Why would you take away a world championship match? Always was talking about reality. I just don't know where he was going with that, unless he thought, I guess, Heard.
Well, technically, Sting is the world champion at this point. Flair is the number one contender, I guess. But yeah. I know what you mean, yeah.
But wasn't Heard there at the time pushing the goofy stuff?
Oh, yeah. Yep. So, Flair's haircut and everything else, oh yeah.
So maybe Ole was trying to appease Heard at that moment. Can't blame it all on Fred. So
when you look at it though, Ole Anderson 0 for 2 here, the Black Scorpion and Shockmaster, as far as like these weird gimmicks.
Yeah. So you know, and he went against his commandments of reality.
Oh, excuse me. It just seems like a real opposite of Ole Anderson type of gimmick. I don't know, like this fake Star Wars guy with this weird voice. I don't know. It just I didn't like it.
I didn't like it either.
Hey, Fred took the ball and ran, though. I mean, people still talk about the Shockmaster to this day, but not really in a negative light, in more of a positive light. It's his action figure is upside down, you know, and he signs it. And like, he took it and kind of ran with the negativity.
And that's what a kind of guy he is. And he didn't let on about that board until 20 years later, 25 years later. He's a real, real, real good guy, and he didn't turn himself into a victim. He kind of took the heat on himself, which was not his fault.
Man, that was embarrassing. Just totally embarrassing for him, too.
And I never heard Ole say, Well, we put a board up and he didn't even see it.
Embarrassing moment for him especially, but for WCW, just not good. Even like Sting and Davey Boy couldn't really hold it in, and Sid, I mean, they're all laughing. I mean, what else could you do? I mean, it's live at this point. It's like, holy crap.
Right, right.
So this pay-per-view, Fall Brawl 1993, was on September 19th, Houston, Texas, at the Astro Arena. 6,000 people in attendance. Tagline, one will rise, one will fall. Pay-per-view buys, only 95K. So not that great here in 93. A little bit of a struggle pre-Hulk Hogan. Obviously, he'll be in there about a year later. But a little bit of a struggle right here in 1993. I know that's why they're kind of giving you a call too, right?
Well, I think so. I had met Eric, you know, when he came in, and I wasn't with him when he took over. Herd was there, and I had left when Herd came in. So it's amazing. Think about this, the Shockmaster. And then going from the Shockmaster to the NWO.
Crazy.
Yeah, and I don't think Eric gets a lot of credit on a lot of things that he did. And the most amazing thing, he knew that Thunder was going to be the death of WCW. And, you know, they gave him no budget for Thunder. Are you aware of that?
I remember listening to his podcast where he was talking about how it was, like, basically way less than what should have been the budget.
Actually, it was like he almost had to pay for it out of his own budget.
Wow.
And the budget had been cut. And that's when they were doing big business. So, you know, a lot of people have knocked Eric over the years. He was had his baptism by fire. He went from being a third string announcer to bringing in the hottest act of all time. I said the Bloodline, I thought was the best angle, but the NWO ran a lot longer, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he did a very good job. And then wiping up Bill Watts' major screw-ups, you know what I mean? And, you know, I sometimes think that Bill didn't even want the job. He was pissing off the balcony, you know, 13 floors up, carrying a gun, you know, treating the guys like shit. And then you get Ole, who comes in and, you know, he didn't move the needle. And then Eric comes in with, I'm not saying he didn't have knowledge, but he had never been placed in that kind of, there goes the ferry. He was never placed in that kind of job and came in and he did an amazing job.
Yeah, definitely. And if you look at it too, you know, obviously you come in, Dusty's there. I mean, you guys are kind of, you know, trying to right the ship from maybe a not great Watts era or a not great Ole Anderson era of booking, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing what I'm saying. Eric didn't get the recognition.
Yeah, and Eric too, obviously. Yep, part of righting that ship. Yep.
Yeah, and it was so far, they were passing out the life rafts, and he rectified it. Along with the talent, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yep, definitely. So as this pay-per-view begins, we start off with a Watts in the dark match, but it's Eric Watts. He defeats Bobby Eaton via submission. Did you think of anything of Eric Watts at this point? I know it's just a dark match, but did you think of him anything? Did you think of him as a good talent? What did you think about him?
I thought he was solid, but Eric's problem, I believe, his dad was pushing him down people's throats. Eric was, and Eric's a good guy. Eric, there was talent there. You know who Eric reminded me of? A young, and I mean a young, Ted DiBiase when Ted started. He was solid, but his dad, like most fathers, see their child as the best, whether he's a little league player or high school basketball player or high school football player. If Eric had gotten some seasoning, like today, if they had sent him to NXT, I think Eric would have had a hell of a career. Maybe not as the lead dog, but he could have helped very much on the card, which is very important. Which surprised me, them letting Dolph Ziggler go.
Very surprising, yes. But I guess because he was there so long and making so much money, I don't know. They didn't really, you know, obviously when the releases have, they don't really explain why the person's released, but right. I know that's what I was thinking. Is like, was he there too long, making too much money? I couldn't really make sense of it either.
Well, there's been guys there, and I'm a big fan of The Miz as long as him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Eric, the other thing is, unless I missed this, they never exposed Dolph's great amateur wrestling career. Did they?
Not really, no. It's funny, a lot of people don't even know that because they didn't really talk about it enough.
Wasn't he national champion for Kent State?
I believe he was. I know he was a very, very accomplished amateur wrestler, but for whatever reason, that wasn't a part of the game plan of mentioning it. I feel like they do that with a lot of guys. They don't mention stuff.
Especially that, being a national champion. And, you know, and he always was in shape. I've never met Dolph. But I think, I mean, okay, you're going to get, and I understand, and we'll get further in this on a sidebar. But I never understood, okay, he's been there 20 years. But there's been a lot of guys they kept for a long time. This guy, they could have done something with him even to this day. And I know people are going to say, oh, he's been beaten too many times. Wasn't he their world champion twice?
Yes. Yeah, he was.
Okay. Couldn't you do something where he said, I dropped the ball. I took my eye off the prize. I was dating Hollywood actresses and models and whatever he wanted to do, and saying, I got one last run, and brother, I'm going to make the most of it. Show him training on the amateur mat. Show him he's in fabulous shape. Show him working out. And then slowly do the George Foreman. Do you know what I mean by that?
Come back, yeah.
You remember when George came back out of retirement after, was it 10 years?
And beat Michael Moore, yeah.
Yeah, but before that, do you remember George was way out of shape and they were feeding him tin cans?
Oh, yeah, yeah. They actually have a movie, Great White Hope. They kind of make to Damon Wayans' character, it's like a little bit of an homage to that almost, where he gets out of shape and stuff like that. Yeah, yeah.
But Dolph
never... Great White Hype, I mean. Great White Hype.
Dolph never got out of shape. I think you could have done something with him. And here's where we're going with this. If you were going to let him go, would he be the tipping scale for 1 year to keep him where he would be something on the card that meant something? And if you really wanted to mess with people's heads, you put him in where he starts getting stronger and stronger and stronger, and feed him to, at the end of his run, you give him a year and you tell him that, he's going to end up someplace and draw money. And he's got that comedy stuff going for him, right? Stand-up comic?
Yeah, yep.
Okay. Couldn't you have built him where he would have helped out greatly on a pay-per-view where he said, if I don't make it, I retire? And he actually retires from the WWE.
Interesting, yes.
Yeah, I mean, same thing with Shelton Benjamin. Shelton Benjamin, what a talent he is. Great, he... correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't he really train Brock? Wasn't he his coach?
Kind of, sort of, yeah. Absolutely.
Couldn't, and I thought he fit great in the Hurt business.
Yep.
Couldn't you have done the same thing with him? Maybe not a year, but 6 months. I mean, he's a true athlete. It's almost like... whoever makes these decisions, and I know they had to make cuts because their stock took a hell of a drop. Did you see that?
Yes. Yep.
Okay, so panic sets in.
Yep.
These guys are probably making a very nice living. But rather than just cut, there could have been a lot more people that weren't going to ever reach their status. That, and I don't want anybody to lose a job, but if those two guys put in the time, they did everything right. I never heard a bit of a scandal on either one of them. Am I right or wrong?
I have never heard it on either guy. Both seem like model citizens.
Why don't you squeeze some money out of them before they leave? Make them mean something for the Monday or Friday show and then into a pay-per-view. And maybe let some people go that you see that they bring in guys for NXT, these college athletes. That doesn't mean they're all going to be pro wrestlers or superstars.
Yep.
I just think... sometimes we're in a different era. When stocks drop, they panic. Especially since the merger. That cleaning house came after the stocks dropped, what, 10%?
Yep.
So, okay.
Yeah, not... not good there on that, but as far as that. But it's interesting that the pay-per-view starts off here with Lord Steven Regal with Sir William, a.k.a. Bill Dundee, defeating Ricky the Dragon Steamboat in a singles match for the WWE World Television Championship. Regal ends up cheating with a little bit of help of Sir William to get the win at 17 minutes and 5 seconds here. Decent match. I almost expect it to be better, but a little bit slow here with Regal, but he does get the win over Steamboat. Pretty damn big win for Regal here, for Lord Steven.
Yeah, and Regal comes from England, and during that time, this was before WWE had NXT England, UK, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those guys were different, and that's what made them so appealing to me. It started, I remember when Tony Charles, I was there when Tony Charles first came over, and he had followed Billy Robinson, and Scott McGee's dad, and they all ended up going to Amarillo to start with, and that's where Junior got the uppercut. Are you aware of that?
No. Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. The European uppercut.
Yeah, he kind of made it famous.
And Junior, how many times did you actually see Junior throw a punch?
Right. I've seen him slap a few guys. Maybe not too much of a puncher.
No, it was that uppercut. So
right.
I thought it's something different on the card. Now, Ricky is a high-paced performer. Go to him and Flair, go to him and Randy. But when you go to him and Regal, it was solid and looked legitimate. And it's a different, you know, in boxing they say styles make the fight. It was a different style. So I didn't see the match, but I would say that would have been a match for people that liked pro wrestling as pro wrestling.
Yeah, I liked it a lot for sure. Pretty good match, but that's my style. I like right. some of that ground and pound stuff. Yep.
Well, but here's the thing, JP, and you know this. You give nobody likes the same stuff. You know what I mean?
Yep. The buffet, so, if you will.
Yeah, and I think that would be. And Regal is another guy that didn't get his due. It was because I think this is how the world has changed. The accent in coming from the South, you know, Turner, the accent held these guys back. Fit Finley, the accent. I mean, Finley and Regal, Finley and Taylor, they really, and then the great Regal in Bobby Eaton, when they became the Blue Bloods, right?
Yep.
It was just appealing. So it's not that some people are going to gravitate to, but there's enough of fans like you gravitated to it.
Absolutely. Now, speaking of buffet, the next match, not a good one here. Charlie Norris defeated Big Sky, a.k.a. Tyler Mayne, a.k.a. Sabretooth, in about 4 minutes, 30 seconds here. Not a good one here from these two. Obviously, Tyler Mayne wasn't long for the wrestling business, more for Hollywood. And Charlie Norris, recently, the Native American superstar, he recently passed away.
Oh, really? Sorry to hear that. God bless you.
But nothing here to write home about.
No. It was only booking at this time.
Yes.
You know, I think only again, and I'm not knocking him, Jim Herd wanted a youth movement. Even though they couldn't work, Jim Herd thought wrestling was easy because it was fake. Do you know the real story of Jim Herd, how he got his job?
No. At WCW or with Pizza Hut?
WCW.
No.
Okay. He worked at, he was an executive of Pizza Hut. And then he became the program director for St. Louis. And he got to know the wrestlers, especially Luthez. So when Jack Petrie got in, he was looking for someone to run the wrestling business. He thought that Herd was booking in St. Louis. And I'm sure that Herd didn't say, no, I didn't book it. He's saying, yeah, I know all these guys. I can turn this around.
Right.
I remember one time he walked in with Lou in Norfolk, I believe. And he presented like, they got to be a youth movement. We got to be more like WWE rather than being as far away from their product as we could be. And again, only with the gimmicks, the two gimmicks we talked about, he jumped on what Herd wanted, the youth movement.
He I don't know. He missed the mark here for sure on this pay-per-view, but we'll talk about the next match. Too Cold Scorpio and Marcus Alexander Bagwell, part of that youth movement, defeated the Equalizer, also known as David Sullivan, and Paul Orndorff in 10 minutes and 45 seconds here. Nothing great here. It's just interesting to note that after Bagwell and Scorpio get over in the match, Orndorff and Equalizer beat them up after the match, getting their heat back, if you will, but a great 450 from Scorpio, showing the athleticism. I don't know about Scorpio and Bagwell as a team, to me, jiving. I know they were a pretty good team, but I don't know. Just something about them don't scream tag team partners.
Yeah, and I think there was some kind of tension there. Scorpio, to me, was a fabulous performer. He wouldn't have been going to Japan as much as he was unless he could really work.
Right.
And, you know, then he was in ECW, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Drew a lot of money there. You know, sometimes, again, only just threw these two guys together. I think if you separated them, they would have helped you more. Marcus was just starting out. And Scorpio was over. So, and putting Paul Orndorff in that position, who had been setting records in WWE with Hogan, why?
I don't know.
I don't
know. Weird spot for Orndorff here. Yeah. Kind of, you know, just there to get Scorpio and Bagwell over, basically.
Yeah, and that was not the role Paul should have been in.
The next matchup, Ice Train defeating Shanghai Pierce with Tex Slassenger. The match goes 3 minutes and 30 seconds. Not a good one here. What do you think about Ice Train? He's getting a little bit of push. Speaking of youth movement, he's getting a bit of a push here, defeating Shanghai, a.k.a. Mark Canterbury, a.k.a. Henry Godwin.
And Shanghai, didn't he have a wrestling background, too?
Oh, Henry Godwin? I'm not sure. No, I'm sure.
Shanghai. Which, you said Shanghai, right?
It's Henry Godwin, yeah.
Oh, yep. Henry Godwin. Yeah.
Tex Slassenger is your boy, Dennis Knight.
Yeah. Okay.
Kind of weird this is a pay-per-view match, too. This seems like a WWE Saturday night. If, you know, Shanghai and Tex are a tag team. If they're not in a tag team and just against Ice Train, I don't know, it doesn't scream pay-per-view.
No. And then Ice Train became a fairly big star in Europe, right?
Mm-hmm.
In Germany and stuff. But, I mean, I don't think he was prepared at this time. And, again, I don't like to knock guys booking. And that's what I've been doing all morning. Or all afternoon. It was not the match to put on a pay-per-view. It only go 3 minutes. I'd rather see them go no minutes and not be on the card.
Right, exactly. You know? Exactly, yep.
And I love Knight, Dennis.
It's interesting, that probably shouldn't have been on there. But the next match, the Nasty Boys, Knobs and Sags, defeated Arn Anderson and Paul Roma for the WCW Tag Team Championship. That match goes 24 minutes. The little tease beforehand, Nasty Boys had a little surprise. They have a new manager that led them to tag team gold, and that is Missy Hyatt. So the Nasty Boys and Missy Hyatt are the new WCW Tag Team Champions, defeating the very weird team of Arn and Roma, very weird horsemen.
Not Arn.
Well, Paul Roma being with Arn, yeah.
Yeah.
You got to love that.
Is there a more solid worker than Arn Anderson?
No, definitely not.
I guess they were trying to get the Nasty Boys over. You know, another youth movement, maybe?
Yep, and Missy Hyatt's the new manager, trying to get that over. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and trying to put the spotlight on Missy. I understand why they did it, but I don't like Arn Anderson doing jobs for not taking anything away from the Nasty Boys. I think they're great. They were a great tag team, and they were different. But Arn didn't need to be in that spot.
Yep. Totally. Yeah. Totally agree. And obviously, Missy Hyatt, I don't know if she quite fits in with the Nasty Boys either.
No, it's like something in the punch bowl, you know, with the Nasty Boys and her being the punch bowl. It just didn't work to me. You know, you got to have logic. Why would she be with the Nasty Boys? I mean, she had been with Eddie Gilbert, right?
Yep.
She had been with other people, but not the Nasty Boys. The Nasty Boys, first of all, I'm not knocking them. They didn't need her. I think it took away from them being the Nasty Boys. I could see Sherry with them. I could see other people with them, but not Missy Hyatt.
Totally agree. Then we have the bounty match. Cactus Jack defeats Yoshi Kwan with Harley Race, 3:30. This was all because Cactus is feuding with Vader, who Harley Race also manages. So he says, I'm going to put Yoshi Kwan in here to collect a bounty on Cactus so that he doesn't make it to the next pay-per-view, which is Halloween Havoc, to fight Vader for the WCW Championship. So kind of a short match, but that's basically the background of it. I don't know if that necessarily needs to be on the pay-per-view either, but I guess they wanted Cactus on the show.
Okay. Is there a running theme, 3 minutes, 4 minutes?
There's a couple short matches in here for sure. Yep.
Why?
Time fillers is what it looks like, but I don't know why.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying, why would you? Cactus had broken off into his own right. He was really, really different. Why wouldn't you put Cactus in a match that went 10 or 12 minutes rather than giving the Nasty Boys 24 minutes?
Yep.
I would love to see, I love to watch Cactus work. You know, he told the story when he came in, right? You know how I got him over? He came in, and I asked Jimmy, what does he do? He said, he gives a great running elbow off the apron. So we had him with a random guys in tag matches, and when the guy got beat, I'd have Cactus run and give him the elbow. He got over by being on a losing team. And Cactus look what Cactus has done in the business. Giving him 3 minutes, why? He hasn't broken a sweat. Let's put him with somebody that's going to fight him back. You know what I mean? I could see him with Brad Armstrong, who is one of the greatest workers of all times. And Brad would fight back. You know, I'd rather have seen a 12-minute match with Brad and Cactus. It would have done a lot more for the card.
Yeah, it's interesting because the next match is a long one, 31 minutes. Ravishing Rick Rude defeats Ric Flair with Fifi to win the WCW International Championship, which was, of course, the former big gold belt, the NWA championship that they kind of had to change because they're no longer part of the NWA. And obviously that was a whole big issue beforehand with Flair taking that belt with him to WWF. I mean, that whole issue. But Rick Rude defeats Ric Flair in 31 minutes to win the title. He cheats, uses the brass knuckles. So he's the heel, Flair is the face here. Pretty good match. Not as good as it could be. It's a little odd with Flair being the babyface and him being the heel. I don't know, something chemistry-wise, it was good, but not great. You'd expect great from these two. But 31-minute match here from Flair and Rude.
And there was a little bit of heat with Rude and Flair.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So what was it over?
Probably a spot, you know, the spot. I can't say anything bad about Rick Rude. He was the real deal. He looked terrific. His work was solid. You know, the Von Erichs made him their world champion. That's what how much they thought of him. Do you remember that?
He was excellent. I thought Rude was definitely one of the best. I mean, there's no doubt about it for me. I just thought that it was interesting that people don't say he's the world champion here. Technically, that is the world title. I mean, WWF's done it a million times. I mean, we've seen it. We're all on SmackDown, different titles. So people are saying, oh, the international title, not title. It is the title. It's the former NWA world title. It's the big gold belt. It kind of is the title, really.
Isn't the international belt the belt that New Japan still owns? Uses for their, you know, their goal where you win the trilogy.
Oh no, you're thinking of the Triple Crown belt. This is actually the big gold belt, like the WWE World Title. That's what the international title is. When Flair comes back, he brings that belt back, but they can't call it the NWA title, which it was, because he technically left with it.
Okay. You know, when I said international belt, you know how that happened?
How?
Do you remember in 1957, Luthez not coming out for the third fall against Edward Carpente?
Oh, yes. You mentioned that to me before. Yes. Yep.
Okay. Lou took that belt and claimed it was the international belt and went to Europe and Asia and Japan and lost it to Ricky Dozan. And then when he came back, he wanted them to use the NWA champion in Japan, and Mushnick and the other guy squashed it. Do you know why Lou wanted it?
Why?
1957, he was there 6 weeks, 12 matches. Now, let's go back. 1957, the yen was probably over $400 to a dollar, okay? What do you think he made for the 12 matches?
Oh, right. He probably made a ton.
He made $50,000 a night.
Wow. Holy work. Shit.
He made $300,000. It's in his book.
Wow.
So that's how they ended up getting their international version.
Crazy. I love that. But to me, when people say Rude's not world champion, he is world champion. International world title is technically the NWA title. They just called it that because they couldn't call it the NWA world title anymore. And yeah. Rude is the champ. And to me, that's the belt, the big gold belt. That's the cool belt.
Yeah, and think about this. When he was in Dallas, they put him over the kids, and he was their world champion.
Yep. So. True. So then we have the main event of the evening. We talked about this a little bit before as far as War Games. Sting, Davey Boy Smith, Dustin Rhodes, and the Shockmaster with Road Warrior Animal in the corner defeated. There, of course, were Sting's superpowers, defeated the Masters of the Powerbomb, Sid Vicious, Big Van Vader, Harlem Heat, a.k.a. Kane and Cole, with Harley Race and Colonel Rob Parker in their corner. The match goes 16 minutes and 30 seconds. Sting, Davey Boy Smith, Dustin Rhodes, and Shockmaster get the win. Shockmaster gets the submission victory over Cole with a bear hug to end it, to finish it. Kind of a weird, kind of clunky finish. Not the best finish in the world, but the interesting thing to me is 16-minute, 30-second War Games match. Super, super duper short. But if you get rid of the Charlie Norris match, you get rid of the Cactus Jack match, which was too short anyway, and the Ice Train match, you put that in the main event, the match gets a decent amount of time here. I just felt like it was kind of one of the shortest War Games matches.
It was probably the shortest of all times. Can I ask you something? Because mm-hmm. I don't know anything about this. Why would Animal be in their corner?
So they were trying to like drum up some, like Sting was getting all the superpowers together, all the Bayface together, and he had a back injury at this point, so he wasn't wrestling. So they were trying to bring some like name value to the show. There's no doubt about it, but it was just weird that it kind of doesn't make too much sense, to be honest. Like they bring in Shockmaster, surprise guy, former WWF guy. They bring in Animal to kind of counteract Colonel Rob Parker and Vader. I mean, Harley Race on their outside, but it's in the cage, so they're not really needed. I mean, there's nothing. These guys aren't going in the mat and having a match with these guys.
Let me ask you this. The Road Warriors are over like something you've never seen before, right?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And it gave them a mystique that they were like outlaws, right? Whether yep. Baby faces heel. Why would they put Animal in that position? Because to me, that weakens Animal.
He wasn't wrestling at this point either because of he had the injury. So oh. So it was almost just like to get him out there for name value, but they were really just kind of teasing that he was going to be a part of it, but he never really was.
Well, I hate that false advertising stuff. If somebody got hurt and the numbers switched and the baby faces were down one, if somehow Animal hit the ring, they could figure that out and equalize the team. Yeah, but to me, it's almost like false advertising. Animal, want to see Animal do Animal stuff.
Yep, and he's not wrestling because Road Warrior Hawk is kind of doing his own thing at this point too.
Japan, I mean,
he's a lot in Japan. He's still technically in WCW, but he teams with Sting a lot in WCW, and with Animal not wrestling, obviously in Japan, he's teaming with the Power Warrior and stuff. I mean, they're doing the Hellraiser stuff rather than the Road Warrior stuff. So.
Right.
It's really kind of one of those things where they're just trying to use some name value of Animal, but he's not going to be really involved.
Couldn't they have used him in a better position?
Yes. Hey, you got to talk to Ole about that. I totally agree.
Yeah.
So, not a great pay-per-view here, to be honest. I feel like War Games kind of fell flat. Flair Rude was good, but not great. Regal Steamboat was good, but not great. The rest of the match is kind of, just there. Not a great showing here from WCW here at Fall Brawl.
And I'm going to give the guys an out. When things are really bad, it takes a true professional to pump himself out to go and give you 100%.
Right.
And it's not that they're doing it on purpose. It's that their mindset is it's hurt. And you don't know how these matches were handled, how Ole handled it in the back. Ole was crude and rough.
Yep.
You know.
Yep, for sure. And the thing is, too, at this point, I mean, 95,000 people watching on pay-per-view, they're not at their high point here. They're not doing good. So it almost seems like all the momentum is kind of headed downhill and the booking is like pushing it further down the hill.
Right. And I think it's because, and I've been knocking Ole this whole time, it was that he finally fell in line that he was going to keep his job and do what the boss wanted, whether it was right or wrong.
And it was definitely wrong. I know. Just felt like this pay-per-view definitely falls short. But like you said, hey, good thing it did because that was the reason they ended up bringing you into WCW.
Yeah.
So, hey, thanks. Thanks to one big negative. It helps you get one big positive for sure.
Yeah.
Right. So let's hit the plugs. You follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. Check out the website, tmptempire.com. Kevin, what do you got going on?
Well, I'll be seeing you Saturday at the 90s convention. Tell them where it's located, John.
So, Rockaway, New Jersey at the Rockaway Mall, 90s Con, starring Kevin Nash, obviously Taskmaster Kevin Sullivan, And the Dudley Boys will be there, as well as you know, a bunch of other cast of characters as well. So 90s Con, you go to 90swrestlingcon.com. You can follow 90s Wrestling on Twitter and Instagram. I mean, they're all over the place, but this is a pretty big show, Kev. This is a big one for New Jersey.
Yeah, yeah. And I got a plug. You know that Ring Squared I've told you about that you can get on Amazon?
Old School.
Old School, yeah. Yep. It's Old School Ring Squared. Let me just read something, because I went back and read it. And this is my summary of it. It's set in 1960s. Ring Squared tells a behind-the-scenes story about professional wrestling in its prime. Well, in its prime then. A wrestling promoter with mafia ties is hounded by the feds for monopolizing sport. You're aware that the feds came in about Monopoly, right?
Yep.
He does everything he can keep his iron grip on the sport, establishes a new legitimate world champion. And that's kind of it. It's very interesting because, like I said, it's a historical novel. And I'm sure that most of our fans out there don't understand why they became three world champions. It was to get the feds off their back for being a monopoly. Were you aware of that, JP?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah. So you can get it on Amazon. And if you do, write some letters to JP and I'll try to answer them.
All right. Awesome. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. We'll see you right back here next week, folks. This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You can check us out on Facebook. You can subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. We are coming to you live from Miami. And coming up next, the Taskmaster, Kevin Sullivan, and Hugh Morris of the Dungeon of Doom settle their score against Arn Anderson and Brian Pillman. And this thing's been heating up for a while. Tag team action coming your way here on Nitro. Kevin Sullivan. Wait a minute.
Oh, I can't wait for this one. They're going to clean up each other, and Hogan's going to walk.
Wait a minute.
What?
Hold on a second. What's with? I can't see. He's got Oakland. I look to. What's going on here?
What is this, a parade?
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. We had a tag team match scheduled here. This looks like something out of a Godfather movie.
Whoa, 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 whoa. this is all too chummy chummy here.
There's a new United States champion, the one man gang in there.
Wait a minute.
What is going on here?
Arn Anderson does not look like he's ready to wrestle. Pillman, who knows? This is. All right, Gene Okerlund. Let's see. Gene Okerlund is there. Let's see if we can make some sense out of this.
Gentlemen, at the risk of sounding negative, what in the world is going on here tonight? We're supposed to have some tag team action. Arn Anderson, you're not dressed for action. Brian Pillman, I don't even want to talk about that. And what about the... What's going on? If you're the voice of reason...
I thought I told you to dress appropriately. This is a business meeting.
What do we got, a four-horseman dress code here?
Let me explain something to you, Gene Okerlund. Kevin Sullivan and I have had what you call a meeting of the minds.
That's a scary
thought. Let me first start off by saying Ric Flair has always been and always will be the flagship of the horseman. He's a world heavyweight champion. We're going to respect, honor, and protect that at all costs. That's our main focus of business, along with getting every other title there is to offer. There's been some little brush fires started. Doesn't agree with me, Rick, or our way of conducting business. If there's not a financial end to the means, we don't want to be a part of it. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I don't know if I totally understand. What about this match that was scheduled to go on here tonight?
I'm saying this match or anything resembling it with these guys is just a war that they can't win. We can't win. There's no winners and losers. There's only survivors. There is no financial gain at the end. That's why I'm telling you we're going to put a kibosh on this.
What the devil is going on here?
First of all, this is directed to you. You are probably the greatest world champion of all times. 12 times world heavyweight champion. A legacy that the New York Yankees, any professional sports, the Boston Celtics can't match. And I do respect you. I respect you so much that if the Clash of Champions will let you borrow the big man.
Big man
Clash
indeed.
Clash of Champions, Big Daddy. We're going to style and profile.
Look how big that giant is. He makes a one-man gang look
you
small.
You I've known for a long time. And sometimes I don't think you get the due you deserve. You see, you are the guiding of that belt that he holds. You really are the enforcer. And I'm going to tell you what. I respect you, and you respect me. And you're right. There isn't going to be any winners. There won't be any losers. There's only survivors. What my problem is, this punk right here got no respect. And this punk got to learn respect. He ain't horseman material.
Before we misconstrue respect for fear, let's don't make any mistake and confuse the two. We're not afraid of you, and we do respect you.
Do you hear that? We're the horsemen. We don't fear anybody. Right, Double A?
Hey, oh, my.
Whoa.
Oh, my goodness.
I told you to keep your mouth shut.
I love
he
the backbite.
Just slapped him. Look at Benoit.
This kind of emotional
Watch
outburst
Benoit, man.
Will stop. This is a business. We're going to run it like a business. You have my word on that.
If I have your word on that, that's good enough for the dungeon. And oh, by the way, do you happen to know that Hulk Hogan is wrestling a member of the Dungeon of Doom tonight?
He is
Thank
hot.
You, gentlemen. Eric Bischoff, let's get back to you. No. What the devil is happening here? Benoit, get in.
Well, this you saw it. This has got to be a setup. That's all I can think of. I don't know what to make out of this thing. We had a match scheduled.